Well, welcome back to Circles of Change here at our special show being broadcast live at the Southern Arizona Horse Expo. And it's a real pleasure for me to wrap up the show with a special half an hour segment with none other than Dr. Jim Hill from El Paso, Texas. Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Zara. It's a pleasure to be here.
You bet. And in fact, Jim and I, before the show, we've decided we're going to go by not Doctor and Doctor, but Zara and Jim. So we'll go with that. Let me offer a brief introduction to our listeners that technically Dr. Hill is retired, but actually he's quite active, still in the business of being an entrepreneur with several careers to his credit, as a matter of fact. He's a native of Florida and graduated from the University of Florida, go Gators, and went on to Auburn to study veterinary medicine, which he then practiced for many years with a focus on horses, specifically thoroughbred racehorses. It was his purchase, in fact, of a certain racehorse with a partner that took his life in a wild direction in the mid-1970s, that racehorse being none other than the famous Triple Crown winner Seattle Slough. Today, Jim continues to exercise and ride retired racehorses every day near his home in El Paso, Texas, which he admits requires him to keep a continued focus on his own health to be able to stay in the saddle in the process. Well, our topic today with Jim, though, is actually the custom cowboy boot business that he came into in 1996, just at the end of a popular era of Western wear. And instead of falling prey then to the slippery slope of deep cost and probably quality cuts and outsourcing overseas, Jim went in the opposite direction to develop what is today one of the elite providers of fine wearable art, I'll call it, cowboy boots. It's called the J.B. Hill Boot Company, named after his and Sarah Joe's children, Jamie and Brandon. So again, Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, and I think you got it all just right.
I did. Okay, I like that. Well, you know, being the East Coaster I was until a number of years, and now not quite the tenderfoot, I have to say that my cowboy boots are the most comfortable thing I could ever put on my feet. But I'd love to start off with a question is, how could a veterinarian go from that business to your obviously a high visible profile exposure and activity in racehorses to starting or taking a cowboy boot business to the next place? Where'd that come from?
Well, actually, I kind of fell over backwards into it. I didn't really intend to get in it, although I grew up wearing cowboy boots and wore them more or less continuously until I was about, 35 or so. And
sure.
I went and got on the racetrack, and it just seemed that cowboy boots weren't really the thing to wear on the racetrack. So I've always been interested in cowboy boots, and a friend of mine offered me an opportunity to invest with a group of people to start a boot company, and I ended up taking the whole deal and being the sole investor, and actually it just didn't work out very well. And so I decided I was more or less semi-retired, and I said, well, I can do this. And so I jumped into it, and I figured it would take me about a year to 6 months to a year to get it turned around and turn it over to somebody. And here, 15 years later, I'm still at it.
I love it, but I have a hunch you did turn it around in not 15 years, though, right?
No, it took me a couple.
A couple. Okay, there you go. I like that humility. Well, you know, the idea of custom cowboy boots, though, and for those of our listeners that would be interested, and of course, those of you web streaming, you can go on jbhilltexas.com and see that these are really wearable art and works of art. Was that always the vision when you set up the business, Jim?
Actually, it was not the vision of the company as it first got started. The business plan was to try and do a custom boot in a mass produced way and market to Western stores.
Okay.
And that didn't work out. And actually, we came into it right in a downturn in the Western wear industry, and maybe we didn't approach it the right way, but that just didn't work out that well. So gradually after losing quite a little bit of money the first year or two, I knew that I had to make a little bit of a change in our our business plan, and that was to try and build the finest boot that we could, handmade boot that we could possibly do, and market to people who wanted them.
Yeah, so these are real specialized approaches. So at the onset of your business, were they indeed for the most part custom-made products, or did you still have a pretty standard line you offered?
It was a standard line, okay, that we offered, and we steered away from custom stuff. And now we still have, you know, our J.B. Hill styles that we feature and promote. But I would say that the vast majority of our business now is custom.
And so, in fact, that's how you and I, of course, met. Was I interacted with one of your customers in a business setting, totally different part of the country, and was so struck by his boots, I had to know where they came from. And before he even talked about the product, Jim, he went on and on about the entire process from the moment he walked into the store. So perhaps you could share with us what you see from your side as the customer experience.
Well, we have it's a very small company, and I've got, I think, 16 boot makers now, and 8 or 9 of them have been with me from the very beginning.
That's tremendous.
And most of them, I think we have one short-timer who's only been with us for about a year, but he's really working out, and I hope he's going to stay with us. But most of them have been with me for 5-plus years, though, the ones that haven't been with me from the beginning. One of the problems is, of course, the average age of my worker is probably, I would say, late 50s, early 60s, and a lot of young people don't want to come into it. So that's a big problem facing me and the rest of the boot industry also.
What I think is interesting, too, is for those who may not be aware that actually El Paso, Texas, is almost one of the epicenters for cowboy boots. Isn't that correct, with a number of companies that have been based there?
Actually, it is. It used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there are a few small companies like ours here, and Lucchese is based here, but they have sent some of their production offshore now, and Tony Lama is not based here, but they have a plant here, and much of their production is offshore. So El Paso has gradually become less of an epicenter for the boot building business.
Those men that you mentioned, though I suspect that if they've been with you that long and they've got the craft as well as they do, that perhaps they're of a multiple generations of
exactly.
apprentices in this area?
Exactly. Most of them are second, third, fourth generation bootmakers. It's a kind of a family tradition, and they learned to make boots at their father's or uncle's sides. And it is a kind of a passion for them and a labor of love.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel very fortunate to be in that situation. You know, we have a small factory here with a little showroom, and we really welcome our customers to come by and visit us, and we try and explain the whole process as best we can, from taking an order to putting the order into production to purchasing the leather and just going right through from one stage all the way to the finished product. And it is really a unique and an interesting experience.
That's exactly what my colleague shared with me, and he commented about the care that was taken to really understand his feet, you know, and the uses he intended for these boots. But I was reading an article that you were quoted in where you said you have to fit people's feet and you have to fit their minds. And what did you mean by that, fitting their minds?
Well, a lot of people really don't know what size they wear.
Sure.
For instance, they may have a real wide foot, and they buy boots or shoes off the shelf. And in order to accommodate this wide foot, they buy a boot that is way too long for them. So they may come in saying, "Oh, I always wear 11," and we end up after we measure them and do outlines of their feet, we can see very well that an 11 is not a good size for them all. They may wear a 9.5 or a 10, but they just need the width. So that's one of the things when you go to a custom boot company that does make custom lasts that you can get as a proper fit. And with a cowboy boot, the fit is paramount. There can be no footwear is comfortable if it fits you properly. If it doesn't fit you well, it's kind of agony.
Absolutely.
So fit is really important. And there are lucky people who can just step into an off-the-shelf boot and never have a problem with it. And that's great. Particularly when you're young, that works. As you get older, it kind of changes a little bit.
I think you're right. The art and science then, Jim, of the materials that you use in your boots, particularly the variety of leathers and even the exotic items. And I noticed on your website that you have many customers that actually bring the hides that they might get from their various hunting expeditions for you to make them into boots.
That's correct. We try and choose unique leathers, and we never skimp on a leather. Of course, I always like to get a good deal and buy the leather as economically as possible. But what we're really looking for is a really high quality piece of leather that has unique qualities and will make up with a great appearance and provide a long-lasting, comfortable experience for our customer.
You bet. Jim, some of the designs that I noticed that I was looking at really were renditions of art of, you know, the longhorn cattle or the animals in the prairie. What's the source of your artwork for these items?
Well, you know, there probably has never, everything probably in the boot world has been done in one way or another, at one time or another. We try not to copy other people's designs. We try and make everything that we do as unique as possible and as different as possible. But the inspiration comes from magazines, from photographs, from life experience, all kinds of things. I'll be just sitting and thinking about something. Oh, that'd look really neat. And then I sketch it out and take it to my boot production supervisor, or to Diana in customer service, who's been in the boot business a long time, and we massage it and hopefully come up with something nice. You know, it's amazing. Sometimes you do something that you just are so excited about, and our customer base does not accept it at all.
Right.
And sometimes you come up with something that you think, oh, it's okay, and it takes off and does pretty well.
So, Jim, what you're telling me is that you are the source of the artist's work primarily then. Is that correct?
Well, I'm not an artist by any stretch of the imagination, but I try and come up with the ideas, and I sketch a little bit probably plagiarize photographs and things like that.
Like what you said, it comes from your life experience. I guess I would have to ask, you know, if your siblings or your parents were still nearby, would they be saying, oh, yeah, we saw Jim, he was always sketching and doodling. Was that indeed the case?
Well, I have always sketched.
There you go.
I'm not real good at it, but I always done it.
Well, that's all of our thought about this idea that some of the things that we love to do at different times of our life kind of circle back and come with us as we step into new things.
You know, I've always wanted to be an artist. Drawing has always fascinated me, but with the things that I've done in my life, I've never stopped long enough to really learn the proper techniques and have the ability to turn out something that was really pleasing. But maybe someday in my old age I'll get to that.
Or maybe what I might say to you, sir, is you're already doing it now, but maybe don't know how to give yourself the credit for it.
Well, I don't know about that.
Okay. This is Dr. Zahra Larson with Dr. Jim Hill. We're going to take a quick commercial break here on Circles of Change in our special show from the Southern Arizona Horse Expo. Stick with us and we'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Circles of Change for our final segment here on our special show. Again, my guest is Dr. Jim Hill from J.B. Hill Boot Company in El Paso. Thanks again for joining me today, Jim.
My pleasure.
You bet. Well, I feel like we've been walking the aisles of your custom artisans hangout there in El Paso. I wanted to ask you to talk to us a bit about your customers. You had said that perhaps at the onset you had some standard lines, but now you do a lot of custom work. Where do your customers come from?
You know, our customer is generally a gentleman or a lady in their 30s to 50s. Mm-hmm. And I would say that kind of fits the age group. And most of them are professionals or business people. We do make boots for cowboys and cowgirls, and I would like to make a lot more, but generally, they are not financially in a situation where they can afford what we produce, and so that's not a big area for us. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunate. I would love to be able to build a handmade boot for rodeo people and working cowboys, but just at this point, we haven't been able to figure out how to get that done.
Well, I guess part of it, too, though, is I know for me, anytime I get a nick in my cowboy boots, I kind of wince. But yet that's part of the boot-wearing experience, right, is them becoming wearable. And when I look at some of your designs, I'm thinking that, boy, I'd want to be polishing them almost every day because they're so beautiful. But maybe that's just a difference in ownership, right?
But I'll tell you, our boots can stand up to some very, for the most part, can stand up to vigorous wear.
You bet.
We build boots for people to be able to wear them. They're not delicate.
Okay. Particularly kind of the hides that you pick, right? Some of the really rough and rugged and yet beautiful pieces that you use.
That's correct. It's without a good piece of leather, your footwear won't stand up.
That's right. Well, do you find that you have your customers coming back and they want that precious item that you made years ago resold, or do they come back and get a whole new pair from you?
Hopefully they do both.
There you go. I like that.
our business really is built on our repeat customer. We have a customer base of about 14,000 people.
Wow.
And we try and keep in touch with them. And thankfully, once a boot wearer gets in a pair of our boots, I would say 80% or maybe above that come back and buy additional pairs.
And I suspect, too, that they're the type of a walking viral marketing compatriots that you like, who give you referrals to their friends as well.
You bet.
Well, with that having said, 14,000 people to keep track of in this day and age, I suspect with the onset of the Internet then, there in the 90s, was that a great way to complement your other efforts? Or is this still what I would call kind of a high-touch business where you really want the customer to hold that boot so they'll make that commitment? Does it work with the Internet connections?
You know, it is a touchy-feely kind of business.
Mm-hmm.
People like to smell the leather, get their hands on the leather. However, we are very proud of our website. I think it is easy to navigate and pretty simple. We haven't gone to any lengths to make it an interactive website or one with movies or music or anything like that. But it gives a prospective customer a lot of information about what we're all about, what we do, and what we encourage is for our customers to get into that website on a frequent basis to look at new designs and new leathers that are available and an occasional sale that we put on, and to keep in touch with us.
That's great. And again, for our listeners, that's jbhilltexas.com. Well, as long as we've got a few minutes, Jim, if you wouldn't mind my asking, I can't help but talk about that experience that must have been just over the top of your owning and being part of a wonderful life of a horse like Seattle Slough. The first time you and your partner met him, did you know that he had it in him to become what he did?
Well, you know, I had no visions of Triple Crown wins.
Wow.
But to be perfectly honest, when that horse came out of the stall as a yearling at the Fazig Tipton sale in July, when he walked out, I told Mick, my then partner, I said, if this isn't a racehorse, my name's not Jim Hill.
There you go.
And he just had that look. He was not pretty. He was big and had great bone, great balance, a lot of presence about him, and just came out there and just presented himself. And I just knew we had to get him. We were fortunate enough to be able to buy him and to manage him in such a way that all his potential was, or most of his potential was realized, I think.
Now, had you been, you had been a veterinarian then in the racehorse sector for a number of years before this, wasn't that right?
Yeah, I had been, well, I grew up with horses, okay. And I had been fooling with racehorses for, I guess 12, 15 years.
Okay, yeah.
By that time, and I had purchased other horses and you know, got them going and sold them and one thing and another.
Well, that's what an experience. So to ride that for the period of time. Well, and of course today, as I mentioned in our introduction, that you still exercise. You personally exercise racehorses still on almost a daily basis, right?
No, I don't exercise racehorses.
Okay.
I'm too big for that.
Okay.
But I'm involved with racehorses, and I have some riding horses. I have a little quarter horse, and I've got three X racehorses, the thoroughbreds that I had purchased to ride or purchased to race or bred to race, and either they didn't turn out to be top horses or one thing or another, and so instead of just letting them go to some not good place, I take them home and start riding them and training them, and I enjoy doing that. I try and do that as often as I can, sometimes every day and sometimes just a couple of days a week.
Well, that love and passion for horses that's been able to stay with you, I know I mentioned at the break here that we're recent rookies, I'll say, by comparison to you, and there's nothing like connecting with the prowess of those beautiful animals, essentially, really, to give you a deeper look into yourself at the same time, right?
You bet. It's a unique kind of experience to have, and you have. It takes. Not everybody can do it. Not everybody can enjoy it. It because these animals are big and they're fast and they're unpredictable, and you have to learn to understand them and read their body language. And I can tell you right off the bat that they read your body language from the minute you walk in the stable.
Well, in fact, I would say the minute I seem to poke my nose outside of our back door that he's already got me scoped out. You know, he already knows what mood I'm in the day, perhaps even better than I do.
Okay.
That's great. Well, Dr. Hill, can you share with us, you know, these various careers you've enjoyed and you continue to enjoy, by the way, at the same time, it's kind of like you've continued to overlap them. What do you think really brought you personally the greatest amount of change in having stepped in to run the J.B. Hill Boot Company and build that business? How do you think you've changed the most in getting involved in that sector of your life?
Well, you know, as a veterinarian, you're pretty well unprepared for business. I had no idea about manufacturing, no idea about retailing or wholesaling. I had no idea about purchasing leather. I had very little financial experience, and I kind of financed the boot company out of my back pocket. So it has been a very steep learning curve. But I think anybody with reasonable intelligence and a desire to stick to it can probably do anything they put their mind to.
That's a lovely way to put it. And my guess as well, at least talking to you here on the line, and I'm sure our listeners can appreciate it, your steady, even hand with how you approach things, and I can just well appreciate you've got a big smile on your face every time you talk about a cowboy boot, that carries you a long way in the business world too.
Oh yeah, we have great moments. We have a few difficult moments, but the great moments, thankfully, are outweighing the difficult moments.
Very good. Well, again, Dr. Jim Hill, thank you so much for what you continue to do for the equestrian world as well as the cowboy and the boot-wearing world. We'll look forward to keeping track of your business, and people can dial up that website at jbhilltexas.com. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you.
You bet. Well, thanks again for joining us today on our special Southern Arizona Horse Expo show. I mean, Alan Martin, Bill Mumy, Michael Blake, and then just now Dr. Jim Hill. What a blockbuster lineup. I'm truly appreciative of that. Remember, for those of you still listening in, do come and join us down here at North Campbell and Roger at the U of A Equestrian Center. There's a full roster of clinics and talks from real deal Western, English, and dressage trainers, as well as product and service providers from all around the various sectors for horses. So again, 9 to 5. Thanks again for joining us. This has been Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Tucson News Talk FM.